Mara Wilson became famous at a very young age, starring in movies like Matilda, Mrs. Doubtfire, and the remake of Miracle on 34th Street. But coming of age in public isn't always easy, and she eventually decided to, in her words, break up with Hollywood. She explores this decision and more in a collection of essays called Where Am I Now? True Stories of Girlhood and Accidental Fame. It's published by Penguin. I'm very pleased it has brought Mara Wilson to our show today. Hello.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Is it true that when you told your mother you wanted to act, her response was, no, you don't?
Yes,
why was she objecting to?
Well, she had done a little bit of it with, she'd done a little acting in high school and in college, and she knew, exactly how hard it was. And also, where we grew up in Southern California, being a child actor was a pretty common thing. And my oldest brother had done a little bit of acting, too, and he was getting burned out on it. So she knew that, being the sensitive kid that I was, she thought that I probably would not be able to handle the rejection.
How old were you?
I was 5.
Your mother and brothers would set up fake commercial auditions for you at home, and even when you performed your best, they would tell you you were great, but you didn't get the part.
Yeah, they did mock auditions for me, and I would just say, well, that's okay, I'll just go on another one.
How soon after your fake auditions did you get cast in Mrs. Doubtfire?
Oh, probably it was less than a year, so I must have just turned 5 at that point. And then I started going on auditions, and I was in a bunch of commercials, probably 3, 4, or 5 different commercials. And then in February of 1993, we were called for, it's open a call for Mrs. Doubtfire. And I remember my mom saying, oh, there's no way she'll get it, so let's just go anyway. And we did, and they talked to me there, and I was, I was a very outgoing little kid, and I think that that's probably what got me, the second audition and the third and all the callbacks.
W.C. Fields hated acting with kids.
Yeah.
What about Robin Williams?
Robin Williams loved it. He loved kids. He was so great with them, so funny, so patient, and he had kids himself, so he knew exactly what to say to make them laugh.
You write that just before he died, you had declined an offer to be in a Mrs. Doubtfire sequel, and that you worried that you might have fueled his depression.
I wondered about
that. You're feeling
that.
Guilty, even though obviously you shouldn't have?
Yeah, I think it was, it was magical thinking, but I definitely did feel sad that I couldn't explain to him why. And the thing is that being a film actress just feels like too much scrutiny, too much pressure to me. And the idea of being in a Mrs. Doubtfire 2, which I couldn't quite, I wasn't sure where the plot would go. I didn't know what it would be. So I had this knee-jerk response of just, no, I don't want to do this, no. And part of it was out of fear. And I wish I could have had the opportunity to explain that to him.
Had you been out of touch?
We hadn't been talking recently, yeah. I had moved a lot and he had moved, so I wasn't sure of, the phone or address to call him. I'd seen him a few years earlier, and I was, talking to his daughter on Twitter, but that was pretty much it.
Much of your early work was geared towards younger audiences, mm-hmm. like Mrs. Doubtfire and Miracle on 34th Street. But didn't you also have a recurring role on Melrose Place? Did your parents allow you to watch shows like that?
They would let me watch Melrose Place. At first, they would sort of fast forward through the, more salacious episodes and more salacious segments of that show. But eventually, I think they thought that a lot of it was just kind of going over my head. So they would let me watch the episodes.
Was it going over your head? Because you write about how even at a young age, you were annoyed at how both screenwriters and the media can sexualize children, bringing into the adult world before they're ready.
Oh, yeah. It disgusted me. I had people on red carpets asking me about, Hugh Grant's eliciting sex. I had people asking me, who do you think the sexiest actor is here tonight? And I think they do
how
that
old
with
were
children.
You?
I was 7. And I think they do that because they think that it's funny. It's funny to make children do that. It's funny to bring children into the adult world. And I really don't think it is.
I saw a clip of you on Jay Leno's show where you were in the second grade and Miracle on 34th Street had just been released. You were missing most of your front teeth.
Yeah.
And Jay started asking you if you had a boyfriend.
Every interviewer asked me that when I was a child. Every single interviewer asked me, do you have a boyfriend?
And were you uncomfortable when you were asked those kinds of things?
I was mostly just annoyed because I could tell when adults were being condescending. You know, I was old enough to understand that this was a joke, that I was a joke to them in some ways, and I did not like that.
But I would imagine when you discovered that there were doctored photos of you at the age of 12 on porno sites, that was no joke.
No, that was still one of the most horrifying experiences of my life, and it was one of these. A lot of my experiences I kind of took in stride, but that was something that really even then shattered me. And right now, when I look back on that, I think of, you know, what my parents and family had to go through hearing that, because I know that if anything like that were to happen to any of the children that I care about, you know, my nieces and nephews, or, you know, children that I've worked with, I get enraged just thinking about it.
You write about how awkward it was for you to go through puberty on the set of your final children's movie, Thomas and the Magic Railroad. Was that what got you thinking that you didn't want to do kids' movies anymore?
Yeah, I wanted to grow up, you know. I wanted to do some movies for grown-ups. My family and I had always said, you know, there aren't enough good movies for children out there. So we tried to do good movies for children, and then we just started doing movies for children, even ones that weren't necessarily that good. But yeah, I didn't look like a child. Yeah, exactly. But I didn't look like a child anymore, like a little child anyway. And you know, and I wasn't going to get the roles that, you know, that people, my friends and peers were getting, because I was having an awkward adolescence and it was hard.
And when did you decide to step away from acting altogether?
I think it was kind of, it wasn't one big moment. There were a lot of little moments. I think at 13, I kind of felt like I was burned out. I still went on auditions when I was 14, 15, but I felt so uncomfortable at the auditions, and I would self-sabotage, and I didn't really want to be there, and I didn't really want to be on sets. And what I started doing instead is I started doing theater at school. I did improv comedy, I did theater, I did choir, I did all of that, and that was what I really loved. So I thought maybe what I was going to do was going to try for a career in theater. And that's when I went away to boarding school to study theater, and then I went to NYU to further study theater, and then at NYU I realized that what really interested me was writing.
Because I was wondering whether you can have kind of a normal life and still be an actor at that age. After all, you're called away from school quite often when you're shooting a movie, or did you just do it during summer vacation?
No, a lot of the kids would just get their GEDs, or they would go to special schools for, you know, professional students. A lot of my friends did that, and some of them, you know, would still go to school and then just go on auditions. I did know also a lot of kids who did that too, and it's difficult, but people out there do make it work.
Mara Wilson is my guest. As she said, she prefers to write, and she has a collection of essays called Where Am I Now? True Stories of Girlhood and Accidental Fame. You couldn't escape people judging your looks once you stepped away from acting. And you see that when you were in college, you filmed a Where Are They Now interview for television, but it never got aired because the producers felt you were too pale?
Yeah, that was really a thing. They didn't do makeup for me. They didn't think to provide makeup for me. And, you know, I was 18 and I wasn't wearing anything more than concealer, maybe. And I had glasses and I was wearing my college hoodie because I wanted to look like a normal college kid. And they just never aired it. I think they maybe aired a clip of it, but it was only to contrast me with Lindsay Lohan.
Well, did that have an impact on your sense of self-esteem? Because it's hard enough. My mother was an actor, and she would talk about going for an audition and feeling she nailed it, and then somebody else got the part, or sometimes she didn't feel she had done a great job and she did get the part.
Yeah.
She never understood that, but it often made her feel bad about herself.
Well, I could take the rejection in stride when I was young because it didn't really mean that much to me. It was just kind of a hobby. But as I got older, I feel like I became more and more dependent upon acting, and especially after my mother died. And now I was beginning to sort of burn out. I was beginning to feel kind of bored on sets. I wanted to explore other avenues, other things, but it was still a constant in my life. So having that constant slip away from me and having it taken away from me instead of me walking away from it felt very hard. It did feel like a rejection. And the thing about looks is I always say that Hollywood isn't immoral, it's amoral. You know, you are a number, you are your demographics, you are your looks. And so that was what I was being reduced to, and that was very hard.
You also write about your mother dying of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
How aware were you of her situation when it was happening?
I don't think I knew she was going to die.
You were filming Matilda at the time?
Yes, I was filming Matilda. I knew she was sick. I don't think I ever really believed that she would die. I don't think I really thought that she could die, you know? Mostly, at that age, parents are invincible, and especially my mother. She was such a strong woman, such a force of nature, that I saw it more as, like, you know, my friend's parents who had diabetes or asthma, you know, something like that. Just something that she would have to live with for a while longer.
Danny DeVito and Rhea Perlman took you under their wing because they knew?
They knew. They did know. And they were very kind to me, very welcoming, letting me stay over at their house and letting me play with them. When my mother died, they provided food for, you know, the weeks afterwards, just so we were making sure we were all taken care of, because I had a big family and it was very hard, and we needed somebody to take care of us, and they made sure we were okay.
What about the reality disconnect? So many scenes in Matilda are magical, especially the scene where Matilda first discovers her powers and dances all around her parents' house. Is it true that when you were shooting it, everyone on set was dancing with you?
Yes, I was so shy. I am not a good dancer. So I was very shy about dancing.
We're not going to see you Dancing with the Stars?
No, never on Dancing with the Stars. I can embarrass myself all by myself. So I was not a very good dancer, and I went up to Danny and I said, "Danny, I'm a little worried about this scene." And he said, "Okay, well, the rule is on set that day, everyone has to dance." So my mom was dancing, the crew was dancing, the cameraman was dancing as much as he could. Everybody there was dancing, and it made me feel so much more comfortable, and I felt just completely secure and surrounded by love. It was wonderful.
You also write about your struggles with mental illness and OCD that you've experienced throughout your life.
Yeah.
Did that cause problems when you were filming?
I think that it was exacerbated by filming. I definitely think that it was, because in filming, the priority is to, you know, get it right the first time. And I think that sort of exacerbated my perfectionism. It made me very frustrated when I couldn't get things done the first time. And it made me much more afraid of failure, which is why I think I didn't do very well in school for years. And I was always hearing, you know, you could get straight A's if you actually sat down and tried. And I didn't get straight A's until one semester in NYU. And that was when I finally did. And that was just because I really tried hard and I put a lot of effort into, you know, being organized. But for the longest time, it was just, I was so afraid of failure. I was afraid to let anybody see me act in my acting classes. I felt like I had to project this perfect image to the world. So I do think that it definitely fueled a lot of my anxieties.
Don't you now host a storytelling show about sharing fears and anxieties called What Are You Afraid Of?
Yeah, I do. And
that's clearly a way of helping you get through?
It is. What we do is we talk about somebody's fears, usually mine, although sometimes a friend's, and then we talk to an expert on that subject. So, for example, once we talked about my sister's fear of getting water in her ears, and then we talked to my friend's dad, who's an ear, nose, and throat doctor.
Now, you've also, most of the roles you take now, because you still do work, are voiceover gigs.
Yes, I love voiceover.
Where you can't be seen. Important?
That is very important to me. Voiceover feels like a different kind of acting. And also, there's no scrutiny over looks. You know, that's another thing that I like about it. But also, I mean, I can use my voice and I can be anybody. That's the thing. I mean, if I were back into film acting, into TV acting, I would be playing a short brunette Jewish woman. Whereas I can play an old woman, I can play a young girl, I can play, you know, a femme fatale, I can play an animal, you know. I just played a spider in BoJack Horseman, which was fantastic.
You have a recurring role in that show.
I do, which was really, really great. That was a wonderful opportunity for me, especially because I think it has a lot of really creative and interesting things to say about Hollywood and about child actors. It's empathetic, but it's not mocking.
The title of this book is Where Am I Now? Are you poking fun at all of those TV shows and blog posts you've had to contend with?
Yeah, definitely. I think that that's very much something that people ask, you know, oh, where is she now? What happened to her? And I also think that there's one of the major themes in the book is me trying to figure out what I am doing certain places and feeling like I shouldn't be there, I don't belong there. So it's a theme that has been occurring through my whole life.
Another is, what do you do when you're competing with Scarlett Johansson and people like that?
Yeah.
That's an unfair situation.
It really is, you know, and it's hard. And the thing is, you know, it's inherently competitive. I also think that I was, you know, I did have female friends, but there was so much pressure there because, you know, you have to go into an audition and look at all the other girls and think, you know, I'm better than her.
There's a storytelling event launch party tonight at 8 with Mara and others, including Phoebe Robinson, at Liberty Hall at the Ace Hotel on West 29th Street. We have a link for tickets on our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate. And then tomorrow night at 7, Mara will be giving a talk, reading and taking questions, signing books at the Astoria Bookshop. Her book, Where Am I Now? True Stories of Girlhood and Accidental Fame. It's published by Penguin. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor.